To start things off today, let me introduce you to John Mueller. He is a professor of political science at Ohio State University. He's had op-eds printed in many of the major newspapers in this country. And he now has written a book that is guaranteed to generate controversy. It is called Overblown: How Politicians and the Terrorism Industry Inflate National Security Threats and Why We Believe Them. John, welcome to KMOX.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
The thesis of your book is essentially we've way overreacted to our post-9/11 world and the threat of terrorism, right?
Yeah, we've, I think, massively exaggerated the capacities, if not the intent, of the enemy. And we've taken a lot of discussions to this sort of worst-case scenario level and assumed that that's reality. And generally, I think the enemy is far less effective. And the big danger, from my standpoint, is that by overreacting and having too much fear, we're basically playing into the hands of the terrorists, doing things that they couldn't do themselves.
Because that is a key component in terrorism, terror.
Yeah, exactly. Osama bin Laden said this quite explicitly. You know, he said essentially we can't really bankrupt the United States, but if we do a bunch of stuff around the world and they send a zillion troops off, we'll bankrupt them. And he's also talked about how fear is important. And he was really happy after 9/11 about all the fear east to west, north to south in the United States. Thank God for that, he said. And he's partly right about that. Fear is very costly. Just to give you one quick example, between 9/11, 2001, and the end of that year, 1,000 Americans died because they drove in cars rather than flying in airplanes. There was a big uptick in the number of traffic fatalities. And that came apparently out of fear of flying. So it has real consequences as well as economic consequences, of course.
All right. Now, there are several things that I want to talk about, and you're going to be with us the whole hour, and we're going to include phone calls and lots of other things. But one of the things that I've been saying for the now 5.5 years since 9/11 is that we as a country have not really been personally impacted by the changes that have been talked about so much. I've talked about many of them myself, the privacy concerns, et cetera. Unless you fly where the airports have really changed. If you live, let's say, a regular American suburban life, you're taking your kids to soccer, you're going to work, you're stopping off at the supermarket, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, your life really hasn't been all that much affected. Maybe you know somebody or you work with somebody who has a person in the military who's ended up going off to Iraq, et cetera, but we really haven't had to sacrifice for that war either. So when you talk about this being overblown, how is it affected daily Americans in ways that I'm not aware of?
Well, some of that, of course, I mean, if you're a Muslim, you're probably not going to say that. But I think you're right, basically, about the average suburban and average American. However, the way it's affected us is by our changing our own behavior so that people don't go on vacations. They don't fly in airplanes. They're afraid sometimes to go to malls. They become very uptight about because of these fears, and that can cause real problems for them. So I think it's not that the government is saying that you have to do certain things, but rather we're often doing that to ourselves, and that costs people they don't do things that they want to do and that they would have done otherwise, and that also affects the economy. Travel and tourism is a very important part of the economy, and when it gets really hit, a lot of people lose jobs and things like that. So I think there is an impact, but it's not the sense that the government is forcing you to do some things or stripping you of all your privacy, though there's some concerns in some quarters about that.
And I have some of those concerns, but again, I don't think that they affect most of the 300 million people in this country. What about
right.
The argument, John, that the Bush administration is doing a pretty good job keeping us safe, and as proof of that, well, we haven't been attacked domestically since 9/11?
Well, I'd have a different tack on that. I think they have probably improved security measures at some cost. It's now much more difficult and costly to send goods here and for people to travel. But it seems to me that one thing we ought to think about in terms of this lack of attack for 5 years is that the terrorists are not trying very hard, or they're not nearly as capable, dedicated, and devoted as they've constantly been pictured. Every year, 300 million people foreigners enter this country legally, and of course thousands of them come in every day illegally. The fact that the terrorists, Al-Qaeda, et cetera, haven't been able to filter in a handful of people to do some terrorism doesn't suggest, I think, that our security measures are so perfect. They'd have to be perfect to do that, but they're really not trying very hard, or they're not nearly as capable as we think. At least it seems to me we ought to consider that as an explanation for this.
What about Al-Qaeda sleeper cells here in the United States? You don't believe that they exist?
Well, neither does the FBI. There's a report. They have not been able to find a single true al-Qaeda sleeper cell in the United States. They found some flakes and some bad guys, and there's some people out there, sort of self-starting groups and people, but not any true al-Qaeda cell. There's a secret report, that, for some reason, it's still secret, in 2005 by the FBI, saying they hadn't been able to find any, and they haven't been able to find any since. Now, either the terrorists are extremely clever and biding their time, in which case it's kind of foolish because the longer they wait, the more likely they are to be found, or the FBI is very incompetent, or they don't exist. That seems to be the three explanations for that phenomenon.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with John Mueller about his book Overblown, How Politicians and the Terrorism Industry Inflate National Security Threats and Why We Believe Them. By the way, let's go to one of the basic things in the title of your book there, Terrorism Industry. Define that for me.
Yeah, the terrorism industry is a group of people acting very naturally who have an incentive to exacerbate the threat, make it worse. You got politicians doing it on both sides of the aisle, but particularly, obviously, the Republicans, because they benefit most from the fears of terrorism, and a couple of elections have shown that. You have bureaucrats who, you know, are busily coming up with new schemes and increasing their budgets to try to secure everything in the universe. The media, who generally find, you know, if it bleeds, it leads, and scare stories about terrorism are a lot more likely to boost ratings and sell newspapers than the opposite. And you have a large number of pork barrel types who say, you know, if the government really wants to have a whole lot of security cameras, I just happen to have a whole lot of them to sell. So they're in Washington pretty quick, you know, peddling their wares. So the problem is that everybody, from my standpoint, everybody's behaving quite naturally. Politicians are acting like politicians, bureaucrats are acting like bureaucrats, and media's acting like media, and the pork barrel types and the risk entrepreneurs are acting like they would.
Are you saying that those various factions, and let's focus on the media in particular, since I'm a member of it and know a little bit about the business, that the media in particular treats terrorism the way we treated SARS and the bird flu and shark attacks and Janet Jackson's nipple?
Yes, often. I mean, it seems to me that what ought to happen is occasionally in the media, people ought to say what your chances of being killed by a terrorist are at current rates outside of a war zone. And what they are is about 1 in 80,000 over an 80-year life span. That's about the same as being killed by an asteroid. And it seems to be people ought to know that. Maybe they'll still be afraid, okay, you know, but you never get that. I've looked hard for anybody saying that in the press or in the media, and it's extremely rare.
But the media is not known for offering perspective on anything. There's not a lot of deep thought going on in radio, television, and newspapers in this country on a daily basis. It's look at what we have pictures of.
Yeah, well,
and by the way, there's a drunk dead stripper. We have to get back to her story.
Yeah, over and over again, right? that's, of course, what people are willing to pay and listen for. But I partly disagree because the front page, you're absolutely right. But I think in the sports pages, you don't get that. If someone hits three home runs in a single baseball game, the first paragraph is going to give you context. When's the last time this happened? How often does this happen? How does it fit into his batting and slugging average? Is this the new Babe Ruth? So what they do is they take a spectacular event like that and give it context. And similarly with a terrorist attack or a bad crime or something, or, you know, like a shooting at Columbine and so forth, part of the first paragraph ought to be how often this happens. And what are the chances? But it's not there. So the sports pages, the financial pages do it too, but not the front page frequently.
And you mentioned Columbine, which was one of those things that in 1999 grabbed everybody's attention, and there were copycat shooters all across the country. And since then, we've had isolated situations where kids have gone into schools with guns. You've had adults going into work with guns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But if you had just watched the news in April of 1999, you would have seen the perception that kids were dying in school every day in this country at the hands of other crazy kids.
Yeah, rivers of blood, right.
Exactly.
And basically it seems to me in that case, what you could, I mean, the Columbine is a sensational story and you want to cover it, and obviously it's horrible and unfortunately interesting in a grotesque way. But what it ought to say is how many kids are actually killed in schools. Are the numbers really going up, particularly being killed by guns? And the answer, as far as I know, was no. But Columbine would still be an interesting story, and you still want to cover it, as I say, but it should have been given some context, and it really wasn't.
You're not saying here that there is no threat from terrorism.
No, I'm saying basically that it's likely to remain quite limited and something we can handle. Obviously, the only really good solution is to have zero terrorism and zero people being killed by terrorists, but that's like saying there should be zero crime. Obviously, any nutcase can walk into a McDonald's and shoot the place up, just like anybody can try to shoplift or, you know, steal a car. So it's going to happen. It's there. There's been terrorism forever. There'll be terrorism forever. So there is a problem. Policing that's focused is, I think, really quite a good idea. But the idea that these people present an existential threat to the United States, that our survival is at stake, or they were engaged in World War III or World War IV, whatever, is just a wildly extravagant way of looking at it.
A listener named Eddie emailed me to say that he had read some of your stuff online, and he quotes you saying, "A handful of plots, some deadly, some intercepted, have plagued Europe and elsewhere, and even so, the death toll has been modest." And then Eddie says, "Modest? Tell that to those people in Madrid or London who lost loved ones."
Yeah, well, tell it also to people who die in many other different ways. There are two calculations that come out of a separate think tanks in Washington. How many people have been killed outside of war zones, which is, of course, what we're worried about in the United States. We're not worried about an insurgency in the country, but terrorism. How many people have been killed by Muslim extremists throughout the world outside of war zones since 9/11? Both of them come out with more or less the same number, which is about 1,000. In other words, 200 a year. That includes Madrid and all the things that you just mentioned. Now, that's 200 a year is obviously 200 too many. And if we can get that down to zero or get it down a lot lower, that's great. But that does not represent a massive existential threat to anybody's survival. It does represent a problem, something we want to get down to zero, but it's not, you know, massive. If you want to do some comparison, maybe this is too glib, but the number of people who die each year drowning in bathtubs in the United States is about 300 or 400. So, if that gives some sort of context, it's just not a monumental number. Obviously, it's regrettable. So is it regrettable that people die drowning in bathtubs? But it's not, so what I'm saying is there's a problem out there. There's things we want to deal with. But the degree to which people are worried about this threat is much exaggerated, it seems to me.
John, on the cover of your book, you have the Homeland Security Advisory System, the color chart that we all know, severe, high, elevated, guarded, and low. I believe we're currently at yellow, right? That's the elevated one in the middle?
That's where we're at, yeah, unless you're at an airport, that it's orange there.
Orange for airport. Oh, it's high at the airport, but elevated everywhere else in America.
Yeah, and someone ought to look into that. I mean, the airports are on orange because of this plot that they uncovered in London last summer. You know, London is a city in a different hemisphere, and in Columbus, Ohio, we're still on, and every place else in the country is still on orange alert. Now, I ran across one study which indicated the Los Angeles airport alone costs $100,000 a day to be on orange alert. And there are 5,000 airports in the United States, quite a few of them in the LAX class. That's one of the costs. We're spending this huge amount of money on security on something that happened last summer in a different country, and nothing ever came of it, actually, though the plot might have been a real one. Who knows? We still don't know on that. So one of the things I argue in the book...
Hold on a second. You don't believe that it's proactive and proper, even though there was a threat last summer to continue... to consider it an ongoing threat and continue to defend against it? I mean, assuming that you believe it's an actual threat, wouldn't you believe, well, that didn't go away on Labor Day?
Yeah, what you have to do is make some sort of calculation about, is it really worth spending all that money in the United States for a threat, which they were saying at the time that there was a huge possibility that this would be, you know, there'd be other people out there doing it, and basically it never happened. So what's happening is that that you got this threat that was found, and people were indicating that there may be other things happening, but nothing has been found since. So the question is, how much do you want to spend to defend against it? You can't spend an infinite amount, and this is one case where it seems to me that much more money is being spent than is necessary.
And by the way, speaking of the chart, the color chart, have we ever been at blue, which is guarded, or green, which is low? Have we ever had what's considered, and by the way, guarded is the general one, general risk. Isn't that what we really are right now? We're at a general risk of terrorist attack?
Yeah, that's what I would think. There's a danger that something could happen here and there. It's something we can deal with and probably live with, and hopefully maybe we can get prevented. That seems reasonable to me. But the problem, if you're in the Homeland Security business and you start saying things, well, things are pretty good, and then something blows up, then you look like a complete idiot.
That's exactly right.
So it's much better to err on the safe side from your standpoint, covering your own rear end. You know, this is CYA phenomenon.
Yep.
By exaggerating the threat. And then what happens is if you say, you know, we're in really severe danger and something happens, then you look like a prophet. And if you say it's really severe danger and something doesn't happen, you say, thank God they listened to me in time and were able to prevent it.
Yeah.
You win either way.
It is odd that on a five-step chart, the middle one is elevated.
Yes.
the middle one should be everything's normal.
Yeah, that's right.
314-436-7900, toll-free, 800-925-1120. We'll include your phone calls for John Mueller. And Mac, you're on KMOX. Hi.
Paul, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Mueller, it seems like you're only focusing in on the lives lost. You keep comparing, we just lost a couple thousand people in one day on 9/11, and we did also in Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to me that the economic impact of 9/11 was horrific to our economy for many years to come. We lost two skyscrapers. We lost part of the Pentagon. We lost part of our communication system at the Pentagon. We lost several aircraft. And who knows what would have happened if Flight 93 hadn't been diverted by the passengers. So, you know, I agree that the loss of life is small compared to, you know, bathtub drownings and such.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the billions and billions of dollars that those terrorists inflicted upon the United States.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the way to look at it, it seems to me, is that the cost of 9/11 were spectacularly high. I mean, there's never been a terrorist attack that's been remotely as costly in terms of lives and in terms of its economic impact, maybe $40 billion in direct costs. But what's happened is that we've lost more lives in reaction to 9/11, and it's cost us far more money in reaction to 9/11 than anything the terrorists did. Closing down the airlines, refusing to fly instead of taking unsafe automobiles. The war in Iraq was made politically possible by 9/11. It would not have been possible otherwise, I think. And we've lost far more lives and trillions of dollars, it looks like, in that war. So what's happened is the reaction or overreaction has been the real problem, the real cost, even in this spectacular, horrible case of a terrorist attack.
But leaving the Iraq war aside, Mac, is part of your point that the economic impact rolled across the country because 9/11 had an emotional impact with America and that affected our economy?
Absolutely. In fact, he made the point that people were willing to drive and risk their lives on the highway as opposed to flying, and I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a cost to doing that, you know, not just the economic cost, but the loss of life.
Right.
But, you know, we're talking about people make those choices. They chose to drive on the highway and risk their life on the highway as opposed to flying.
Right.
They did not choose to die in the towers. They choose also to send soldiers to do battle for us in foreign lands as opposed to the enemy coming to attack us in our homes or in our places of work.
Yeah, assuming the war is preventing that from happening, but that's very questionable. Yeah, it's just that basically what happens is that the fear itself is very costly. And both economically and in terms of human life. Let me give you a really spectacular example of it. It's not terrorism. The United Nations, just a couple of years ago, 100 scientists worked on what happened at Chernobyl, the health effects of Chernobyl, which is this nuclear disaster in the Soviet Union in 1986. And what they found was the health effects from the radiation were very small. Maybe 40 or 50 people died total from the direct effects of the radiation. In fact, their lives could have been saved if the Soviets had had protective covering for them. The biggest health effect by far was anxiety. Alcoholism, people unable to work because they're afraid they're going to die anytime of cancer. So what happens is fear is really very a justified fear. Somebody's coming at you with a knife, obviously, fear makes sense. Unjustified fear, however, it can be very debilitating physically and actually can shorten your lives. People die from anxiety over a long period of time. And so consequently, what my concern is that what we should be doing is trying to get the fear in context, get the threat in context, and constantly telling people that, you know, there's a terrorist under every bed is costly. It increases anxiety. A friend of mine, on the fifth anniversary of 9/11, told her neighbor that she was going to go to the mall, and her neighbor was appalled. You're going to the mall on the fifth anniversary of 9/11? You know, this would be a big danger. And that kind of behavior, even though it's minor in each individual case, adds up substantially. So my concern is that what the government should be doing is trying to get things in context. And while people should be concerned about terrorism, an unjustified fear is very costly, both economically and it can be in the long term in terms of human lives.
All right, Mac, I'm glad you called. Before I take a break, one point related to that. I find it interesting that if you ask most Americans if they're afraid now, the answer, yes, would be much less frequent than it was in the 3 months following 9/11. That last quarter of 2001, a lot of Americans were afraid because we were living with that attack in our very recent past. And now it's been 5.5 years. Not nearly as many Americans are afraid.
Yeah,
but wait, here's the other part of it. Remember that in those months after 9/11, what our government was telling us, everything's going to be okay. You should go on with your life. You should keep shopping. You should help prop up the economy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now we don't have any of that. And instead, we have the government telling us every day, watch out because the terrorists are going to come and get you.
Yeah, well, they were saying that quite a bit after 9/11 as well. And the polls basically don't show that much of a decline. There's some decline immediately after 9/11 in terms of fear, but it's still hanging in there.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's still hanging. I've looked at a number of polls, and some of them do drop immediately after 9/11, like this October or something, in terms of do you think there's going to be one in the next 2 minutes, in 2 weeks or something, or do you feel personally you might be attacked? But mostly it's hung in there pretty substantially, despite the fact there hasn't been any attacks. And even the question which says, do you think there's one likely in the next few weeks, the number of people who say that's very unlikely has stayed at below 10%, even though these people have been consistently right for 5 years. And it still hasn't gone up very much.
A listener by the name of Dave writes to say that you are comparing death by terrorism to drowning in a bathtub. Drowning in a bathtub is an accident. These terrorists are trying to kill us on purpose. I guess, according to you, Mr. Mueller, we should wait for thousands or millions to die before we do something about problems like the bird flu. And let me read you one other email, and then I'll let you respond to both of them. Daryl says, Mr. Mueller seems to be saying that terrorism is little more than an annoyance and not something to be taken as a deadly serious reality. It's one thing to point out the shortcomings of our efforts to combat the evil that's targeted at us, and quite another to come up with viable solutions. What do you say, John?
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to do is put it in context. It is a problem. There are people who are being killed. They certainly are being killed intentionally. There's no question about that. But what you have to deal with is an assessment of how capable and dedicated and deadly the enemy actually is. And I think what has happened is people have extrapolated much more than is reasonable to see this as a really massive cosmic kind of threat. And what it is basically is a relatively small number of monsters and thugs who are up to no good but don't seem to have the capacity to do a terrific amount of damage. They can do some damage. And the amount of damage they're doing is the reason I use the bathtub analogy. Deaths are morally comparable or anything, but that it illustrates that something we don't worry about at all actually kills more people than terrorists do. People sort of shrug off deaths in bathtubs, and the number of people killed by terrorists is not even that high since 9/11, at any rate. So consequently, it seems to me that my main pitch is to try to. There is a problem, there is something to be concerned about, but it's not a monumental threat. And what you get from so many people in the sort of intelligentsia around this country is that it's a threat of catastrophic proportions, that it could destroy the state system, that the United States, that's an existential threat to the United States or to its survival. Those statements are all directly out of writings over the last 5 years. And it just seems to me that that's... very foolish. The enemy is not that does not seem to be remotely that capable, and the threat is nothing like, say, Adolf Hitler, for example, who the terrorists are sometimes compared to.
One more quick point before I let you go here. It seems to me that whenever I hear stories of a guy blowing himself up in a disco in Israel, or the bombings in London, or even 9/11 here in this country, that for that moment, it seems like, wow, the terrorists won. But in the long run, they haven't accomplished much, have they?
No, it is not.
I mean, for their cause.
No, I don't think so. And much of what they've done is counterproductive. I'll give you a quick example. A couple of years ago, they blew up some bombs in Jordan. One of them at a hotel wedding, killing a bunch of Palestinians and a bunch of Jordanians. There was a poll before and after that asking Jordanians whether they had a warm and cuddly feeling toward Osama bin Laden. Before the explosion, it was about 25% said they did, and after it was less than 1%.
Wow. That's a perfect case. John, I'm out of time, but I appreciate it. The book is called Overblown. John Mueller, you have more comments, you can add them to my website, harrisonline.com.